my friends, is the power of one. Check out what this isolated individual does. In verse 2, the thought hits her that she knows someone who is capable of dealing with leprosy. And her mind begins to go, and the slave girl begins to dream about what could be if only so-and-so could meet such-and-such. And the rest is history. And this young girl reveals to us the first force in our lives that we dare not underestimate, and it's the power of one. Never underestimate the surprising power of one. Somewhere, somehow, at some time, this young girl experienced or saw that God used Elisha to heal someone. And she pointed him out to someone else in her life who needed to be touched by that power. You see, the power of one is wrapped up in any one person's ability to see what God could do in the life of someone else. And when that one such person begins to dream about what could take place if only so-and-so could meet such-and-such, the rest is history. Amazing things begin to happen because of the power of one. Now, this isn't an isolated incident in the Scripture. We see it over and over again in the Bible. In John chapter 1, there's a fisherman named Andrew who's with his buddies one day, or a buddy, and he meets this man named Jesus who suddenly comes to realize that he's more than just a man. And the first thing we're told that he does is he runs off to tell his brother Peter, Simon Peter, that he's found the Messiah, that he's found this Jesus. That's the power of one. In John chapter 4, Jesus arrives at an ancient well called Samaria, north of Israel. And when he sits down at that well, he gets to know an unnamed woman who stops at the well, and before long, she becomes convinced that he is the Messiah. And John chapter 4 tells us that upon meeting Jesus and believing in him, she went into town and told anyone who would listen to him about this Jesus. Verse 39 of John chapter 4 tells us that many from that town believed in Jesus because of that woman's testimony. That's the power of one. One more. In Matthew chapter 9, we meet a man by the name of Matthew. His Jewish name is Levi. He's a tax collector. He sits in a booth every day. That's his local office. He's a part of the Jewish IRS, collecting money from the Jewish people to hand over to the Romans. And one day, Jesus walks by his booth. Matthew must know something about him, and he invites him to follow. And Matthew gets up from his booth, and he leaves that world, and he becomes a follower of Jesus. Before long, we find out in Scripture that Matthew holds a dinner for Jesus. And he invites all of his tax collecting friends to come and sit down to a meal with Jesus and his disciples. And they rub shoulders. That's the power of one. Think about it. No one in all the world was in a position to influence those tax collecting friends like Matthew was. No one was in a position, such a key place, to influence Simon like his brother Andrew was. Only a brother can convince a brother of the reality of Jesus Christ. No one in all the world could tell that Samaritan town about Jesus except for that woman and how much her life changed. And each of them somehow knew it because they tapped into the power of one. And people met Jesus as a result. You know where I'm going with this. Like the young slave girl in 2 Kings chapter 5. And like Matthew. And like Andrew. And like that woman. There are people in your world that only you can touch. Only you. Only you. Only you can touch some of the people in your life, so never underestimate the power of one. Some of you have close friends. Some of you have a best friend. No one is as uniquely positioned in your world to touch them than you. Some of you are parents and are grandparents. Chances are pretty high that your influence on your kid or your grandkid is an influence only you have. Some of you are teachers, your coaches, your doctors, your nurses. There are people in your world that you have unique influence with because of the things that you walk through life about. Some of you are high school students or middle school students with friends for whom you are the only Christ-following friend. Catch that. You're a teenager and you're the only Christ-following friend some people have. The power of one reminds you of the influence you have. Some of you are neighbors to someone. Friends next door don't have many neighbors, and they especially don't have many neighbors who give a rip about who they are and what they do and what life holds for them. Only you fill that role. You may be in retail or work the counter at a local restaurant. You're in business where you rub shoulders with people every day. Maybe you're an administrator or you supervise people in your place of work, or you work with a local ministry here in Salem, Kaiser, or here at Salem Alliance. You may think of yourself as blue collar, white collar, some other color of collar. You may be opposed to the idea of wearing collars at all, but you have a sphere of influence. You have a sphere of influence around you that you step into every day, and there are people who are influenced out of that sphere of influence that only you, oh, catch that, two words, only you can influence them. There are people in your world that only you can influence. Naaman's wife's servant is an example. Who else in Naaman's sphere of influence in that foreign country could have heard the message of hope that she gave? And that's why I'm here this morning, to remind you that influence matters. And for this church to become all that it's intended to be, each one of us must take our influence seriously. Well, I can hear the rubber hitting the road. So let me ask you a question. Who comes to your mind when you begin to dream about what could be if only so-and-so could meet such-and-such? Whose life would you like to see changed because you know the one who can do the changing? As the great theologian Fred Meyer put it, who's on your list today? Never underestimate the power of one. Now let me apply that to short-termers very quickly. Some of you are here this morning, and for your following of Jesus Christ has been very new to you. It happened last week, last month, last year. And you inside think to yourself how little you have together, how little you understand. Can I just say this? This is the lesson for you as short-termers. You have incredible power in the life of those around you. They've seen something happen. They've heard something happen. Someone mentioned to them that something happened in your life. And you are uniquely positioned in a place where you have lots of people in your life who don't know Jesus Christ within your sphere of influence. And who's on your list today out of that group that you need to tell about what Jesus has done for you? That's the power of one. Take your influence very seriously. Let's move on to a second force in this story that we dare not underestimate. It's related to the first one. And it's simply this. Imagine that you are taken forcibly from your home at a young age. You're marched off to a foreign country where you have to learn a new language, try new foods, meet new friends, and join the workforce long before you plan to. Imagine that every day your job for long hour upon long hour is meeting the needs of somebody else to do whatever they tell you. You receive no salary, you hear no news from home, and there's nothing that gives you hope that a change is on the horizon. How would you feel? How would you respond? If it were me, I would spend every day, every moment of every day, longing for the green, green grass of home. Every night I would dream of my family and the friends I left behind. Every meal I would eat, I would remember that the food at home was better. Every time I said the wrong word in this weird new language inside, I would say the word in my native language and say that's a better language. And every night I would lay my head on my pillow and think to myself, I hate my life. But returning to our second character in this story, this young slave girl lives life far different than that. The one thing that the author of 2 Kings wants us to know about this slave girl is that she did none of that. He wants us to know that she looked outside of herself at someone else, what her mistress's husband needed. She didn't complain about the food. She didn't cry herself to sleep. She didn't pine herself away about being back home again. I know it's an argument from silence, but the thing he wants us to know is that she looked outside of herself at someone else to see what he needed. Much of the Bota world these days revolves around the sport of soccer. The beautiful game, as the world calls it. And as a result of that, Jamie and I have coached or sat through countless matches of soccer through the years. Gotten to know some wonderful people. It's been a wonderful place to develop influence and develop friendships. We met a family a couple of years ago that taught us an interesting ritual or tradition that they have as a family. Whenever someone in their family, particularly their kids, does something or says something or displays an attitude that is somewhat self-centered, they have this little thing that they do where they look that person in the eye and they take their hand and they rotate it over their head and they say, I guess it's all about you, isn't it? Now let's practice that together, because some of us are going to use that before the day is over. Right hand over your head, ready? I guess it's all about you. Say it with me. I guess it's all about you, isn't it? Now how many of you are parents or grandparents? Have you ever noticed that every once in a while in your life, one of your kids or grandkids takes on that same it's all about me attitude? Maybe the family needs a new car and one of your teenagers informs you that the kind of car, including model, color, interior features that you need to be buying, need to be specified to their desires because they have an image to keep up. As opposed to the Benjamins that it's going to cost, their image is what's at stake. Or maybe your experience is like ours, where both Jamie and I have come to conclude that we serve two basic roles in life for our children. We are a taxi driver and we are a human ATM. And every once in a while, how many of you as parents and grandparents have had to look at your kids and you should be saying to them, I guess it's all about you, right? Anybody? Any takers? Okay, now some of you are here this morning and you're between the ages of, let's say, 13 and 17. And in your life, you may want to make use of those words sometime this week as well. How many of you ever noticed in your parents or in your grandparents that they've taken on a bit of a it's all about me attitude as well? Maybe they start complaining about stuff that's really their responsibility. Maybe they start to whine, as we all do, about how tough life really is. Maybe they expect you to wait on them hand and foot. Some of you teenagers need to look parents and grandparents in the eye today and say, you know what? I guess it's all about you, right? Well, I knew I could get us going both ways because that's human nature. If we're not careful, life becomes all about us. We all have the ability to live self-centered, egocentric, it's all about me, the world revolves around me lives. And that's why Jesus said that those who are first will actually end up last, and those who are last will end up first in His kingdom. That's why Paul wrote that we weren't supposed to do anything out of selfish ambition or out of vain conceit, but we're supposed to look out for the interests of others as being better and more important than ourselves. That's why Jesus said that there's no greater love or no greater choice that a man makes than when he lays down his life for his friends. That's why Paul wrote that each of us has chosen to turn to our own way. That's why Jesus said that if you want to become a great person in His kingdom, you need to learn what it means to live in a mode of servanthood. And that, my friends, is the second force in this story that we dare not underestimate. This young slave girl, who has every reason in the world to groan and grumble, to mumble and criticize and complain. Instead, she looks around her, she spots a need, she thinks of a solution, and she gets busy on it. And in the end, a man who has been irreparably damaged by a disease is fully healed because of her actions. And the second force we better not underestimate is this. It's the power of outward vision. Never underestimate the power of outward vision. If you've been asleep to this point in the sermon, now is the time to wake up. Because this is just hugely important for our church family. The truth is, the person who cares more about other people than they care about themselves can change the world or can change a few people's worlds along the way. And that's because God is going to use you. When God finds someone who's willing to give their life away, someone who doesn't care who gets the credit, someone who finds other people and walks up to them and goes over their head and goes, you know what, right now, it's all about you. It's not about me. When God finds that person, God always uses that person. And to be quite honest, living any other way runs counter to all that Jesus stood for. And besides that, living a self-absorbed, selfish, and me-centered life is boring. Don't lose sight of what's going on here. Remember how it goes. In verse 2, a young slave girl looks at an older man, dreams about what could happen in his life if only so-and-so could meet such-and-such. And as a result, his life is changed. Outward.